Welcome to Accounting High.
I'm never going to forget this. The high-performing zombie. People get addicted to performance and addicted to achievement and addicted billable hours. And so it's not just the things that we consume. It's the, I get approval and that gives me a hit. That gives me a rush.
Everything felt so pure. All my frayed wires in my head just fused together.
Ayahuasca will take you places without your permission. It is like, come on, we're going for a ride.
Welcome back to our class. It's the guide. Please take a seat. Step into this unique guidance session. Navigate with me. It's the capital S. Oh, yes, I'm fresh. C-double-O-T. Y apostrophe. O-K-R apostrophe. C. Yeah. Janitor Scott. Coming to you live from the closet with a bucket and a mop. So find a cozy spot. We all want financial freedom. A-C-C-O-U-N-T-I-N-G-H-I-G-H. Preach. Putting this course together. Sit back. Relax. Open your mind. Class is in session. Guidance. Class at Accounting High.
Introducing the star of our show.
Miss Amber Setter and Scotty.
We're going to have a problem here.
Class is in session. We're in the guidance office with Amber Setter. She's my guidance counselor today.
Yay. I'm super excited to be back. And the last time I was here, I don't think I heard that nod to Dr. Dre. So I'm even more pumped up for the episode today because I love that
song.
Did
you like that? Dope.
Totally love that.
Well, you're in Cali, so you're calling from the West Coast.
Yeah, nothing but a G thing, baby.
Mm-hmm.
I think a really cool place to start our conversation as the interviewer is kind of how we got here, to let the audience know that I knew that you were going to be at a retreat center where you would be going on an ayahuasca journey. And I recall that I text you to check in and I was like, how about I interview you for the show? So
that was a joyous moment. I love that. I remember telling you probably around December when I decided I was going to go on this journey, you had discussed it a bit during our first episode on the show, planted seeds in my head, so to speak. People plant seeds and it just echoes in your head. Those kind of things echoed in my head. And then I did go on an ayahuasca trip in January, which was about a month ago from this recording. I'm back. I'm a renewed person. And we're going to talk about that.
Amazing. For the audience who maybe didn't listen to the podcast interview that you did with me and Evan Enneman, the Dare After School special, just what brings me to the conversation. And then for the audience who doesn't know, I am an inactive CPA. I started my career as an accountant. I've been in the profession 20 years, either directly working in firms or consulting to them. Really, the intention today is to just share information that could be helpful.
Pronounce it again. I know my parents have a hard time pronouncing it. It's ayahuasca.
Ayahuasca is one of many plant medicines. All of us go through life with like this unique prescription lens. This allows information to come in or not. I've got a pretty big band-aid here with hearts because I had a traumatic childhood, right? I had a mom who was not around, but she has mental health issues still today and was a drug addict, homeless at a period of time. And how we grew up shapes our life, and we're either conscious of it or not.
The choices that I made were shaped somewhere in the back of my head. Something was telling me, some narrative. There was some story that I was telling myself or something that I was playing out.
Why don't you let us in a little bit on like how your journey with mental health has been, working in the profession in general?
Drugs and mental health have always been a very wild ride in my life from an early age. Plant medicine, right? I experimented with marijuana, with mushrooms. I was never diagnosed ADHD at a young age, but I always loved ADHD meds. So my brother was prescribed Adderall. So I would take his Adderall, or kids at school would sell it, zone right in, and I could get everything that they told me to get done. That was school, that was anything. Anybody that needed me to do something, boom, I could do it. And I could sit in, I could zone in, I could focus. I was prescribed to Vyvanse. I was also prescribed to clonazepam, two prescription drugs that basically kept me very functional and very productive to grow my practice, to grow my business, to be a very productive member of society. I never questioned it. I was pumped, it every single day to get my work done, to get to the office, to do the work. It was like I was zoned in on building my firm, making money. For 16 years, I took every day probably 30 milligrams of clonazepam and 70 milligrams of Vyvanse, which turned me into a very high functioning zombie. That's what I was. Very high functioning. It's a lot of stimulants. I always saw it as my performance enhancement drug. That's what it was. Mentally, I was okay. I wasn't sad or depressed. I was taking stimulants every day. I felt great. Only if I stopped taking them, like I couldn't get my prescription filled, that's when things start to get a little rocky.
I think there's this shadow side that is coming up, right? Like I've read on Fishbowl where people go anonymously post stuff about working in the profession. Like people use performance enhancing drugs to meet their billable hour requirements, to pass the CPA exam. And to hear you use this terminology, I was a high performing zombie. I've had people that walk into my coaching practice that are in that position where they've done all the things that they were asked to do, met all the requirements, but there's no vitality. There's not a feeling of aliveness. There's not much joy. And it's a gift to realize, oh my gosh, I'm a high performing zombie. But it can also be really debilitating to be like, oh my God, like, what am I doing with my life? So we've heard about, hey, I was using all these drugs in order to get results.
Oh, but those aren't called drugs. They're called prescriptions. Those are prescriptions.
Prescription.
Medicine, yeah.
And stimulants, which, like, I'm totally addicted to caffeine. Not going to lie. Like, wake up. I'm aware of my addiction there. Not doing anything about it. That's okay for now. But that is the irony, right? That there's so much stigma around what we're now calling plant medicines. So what is ayahuasca? It's a blend. It's kind of, I don't even know what yours was like. Mine was like a tar when I drank it. That's a vine and a flower.
It's like a molasses. It's like a molasses blend, a little watery molasses. But yes, a vine and a leaf that are from two different plants that are brewed for like 10 days, around 10 days to brew, make this magical, mystical brew.
Right. And that magical, mystical brew is currently illegal in the U.S., but legal in other countries. So you didn't break the law in your journey. Why don't you tell us, like, why we're like, and there's got to be something more. So what had you hungry for something more?
I was hungry for the self-actualized mind. Mm-hmm. I think you teased that on our episode. And I felt like I was on the edge of being able to get there, but I needed a little booster. Now, this isn't what my conscious decision was. This is me reflecting on it. And because you just mentioned that, my conscious decision was I needed some more guidance, or I needed some more direction. I needed something else because I had just done a lot of stuff that past year. For me personally, was big, pretty monumental. Like I was performing on stage. I was doing music videos. I was doing all the things that I've been pent up wanting to do for the last 16, 17 years that I never did. So sort of like the midlife crisis right around the corner. I had just turned 40 and I was really, I guess, starting to feel some alienation from people that used to be close to me. They had had enough of it. And it's almost like bad energy that I would always get from certain people that used to be my biggest supporters or biggest fans back when I was just running a practice and I had these big ideas. Now I actually was doing all these big things and I started to feel real alienated, and maybe I was doing this to myself. You know, maybe I'm being selfish, or I was in a bad place, really, really dark place after QuickBooks Connect. I didn't know what the hell was going on. I had a firm that was very, very successful, and I kind of like ignored that for a while to go build this school, whatever this accounting high thing is, right? And I'm still questioning what that was or what I wanted it to be. And also, why was I rapping in the first place? So all of those things were just circling my head, and it was just me, me, me. And now feeling sorry for myself and all this BS. It was all the self-talk. And that narrator when you're in it. In the moment, I didn't even know who my supporters were at that point or who I could go to really talk to about what I was feeling. That's what kind of led me to my wife saying, you need to do a meditation retreat or something. She told me I should do some kind of like 10-day silent meditation retreat, which sounded appetizing, but ayahuasca sounded much more appetizing to me and it fit my flow as a human. This was like, I'm looking at all the options for different medicines. And there was like, I had heard about DMT, like in rap songs. Travis Scott just talked about ayahuasca in his latest album too. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't just Amber and Scott Zaret. It was Travis Scott and Kanye West that was in my ear on mm-hmm. this. And I heard Kanye talk about DMT on a few different tracks. And like, I had to experience that. I felt like I was ready for that. And it seemed like something naturally I would do if I want to be a rapper. Like, I should go on this. So that was the other like shield that I was holding in front of myself. Like, I'm a rapper now. I got to be doing crazy things. So that was the other reason for me and my decision.
Versus my voice that's like, you're a mom, you shouldn't. You're a CPA, you shouldn't. You know, like, it's just funny the juxtaposition where it's what we learn our internal voice.
One of my favorite rap groups was Outkast. And being different. I've always been considered different anyway, but I'm in this group of CPAs and I'm not even a CPA. I already knew that the stuff that I was doing was different. So me going off and doing ayahuasca, I'm just that person outside of the crowd that's coming back into the crowd and sharing his experience. At least that's how I see it right now. But I was always, like Outkast, the different one. They were the different one in rap. I'm just the different one in accounting, I guess.
So this is perfect. Thanks for queuing me up because, as you may or may not know, Andre 3000 from Outkast recently put out an album where he plays the flute for a couple hours. And one of his songs...
Air flutes.
Yeah. And one of his songs is about when he did ayahuasca this night in Hawaii when he turned into a panther.
So it's so crazy you brought that up because I had been listening to that album a lot and I didn't even know it was about him doing ayahuasca, but I played it for the people there because they had one of the same flutes and I heard him playing it and it sounded like Andre. I said, you sound just like Andre. He didn't even know who Outkast was. And I played him some Outkast. I played this album and they were playing it the next day, like in the ceremony space. So I'm so glad you brought that up too, because it was a backdoor into this. Like that whole bridge that I was trying to bring an Outkast into it. So I love that you sealed the deal there. It was the alley-oop. I had a panther-esque experience. I did not turn into a panther, and this wasn't in Hawaii. Bless you for bringing that up. It's a great album.
What I love about Andre 3000 is I love that he's evolved as a human, right? And it's really interesting how some of the OG Outkast fans are really mad that he's not making a rap album and they're resistant to who he has become, right? I know for me, since I've been on this deeper level of growth and expansion, my circle has changed. It's evolved, but it's because of just being into this other space where you just get really clear on what matters most to you and what's important.
And I started looking them up online, probably right after QuickBooks Connect, but I found Ayahuasca Retreat, Costa Rica, boom, looked it up, read a couple articles. I was excited. I set up a call. They had to approve me first. So I had to go through an interview process and I met all their requirements and they invited me. And then I got the strict dieta. And they said all the things that you can't do. So can you explain to our audience, our listeners, what that means, like what a dieta is?
Yeah, so a dieta, it's spelt like the word diet with an A. And it's, in ways you might think of it as you're actually already starting the ceremony. So depending on who you work with, it's going to be something along the lines of anywhere from 1 to 4 weeks of preparation. The first time that I did it, I was very much a Girl Scout, right? I was like, okay, if they give me like this process, I'm going to follow it to a T. And, you know, there's things in there such as eliminate caffeine, eliminate alcohol, eliminate dairy, red meat, don't consume media.
Sex, masturbation, neither uninformative conversations or unproductive conversations. Like it was a lot. It was very strict. And I'm going to stop taking this medication for that month. And the doctors for the retreat said I only had to stop that 4 days because of the half-life and everything. But it was marijuana that I couldn't smoke for the whole month. And I couldn't stop smoking weed. I was able to stop with the Vyvanse because that's just a pill and I just didn't take it every day. That was my stimulant. But the marijuana was like the first day by 5 o'clock. I had to get high. I needed something. I had nothing. No caffeine. None of those things that we just mentioned. Dairy, sugar. I had already been redefining my diet anyway. And I don't have any gluten anymore or sugars or dairy or all the bad stuff. It was like limit social media too. So I was able to go full clean everything. But it's hard. I think that dieta is something for everybody to experience, even without the ayahuasca retreat.
Absolutely. I was thinking the exact same thing. It is just such a helpful practice to challenge yourself to stop doing behavior and notice what comes from it, right? Similar but different, I did dry January. One thing I noticed is my first day back to work, at the end of the day, I was like, I want a glass of wine. And I was like, oh, God, what? I can't do that. I can't be that person because what I haven't shared before yet is that my dad's an alcoholic, right? So I'm very like, I walk that line. I get really nervous about being addicted to substances. And then I went through not drinking alcohol for the whole month and I noticed how consistently happy I was. It wasn't up and down.
Don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. I didn't
the
have
mental
to like,
clarity.
Yeah. Yeah. So I'm like, I'll still drink alcohol. Like I'm going to France this summer. I'm definitely going to have some wine and some cheese, like for sure. But on the weeknights, do I really need a glass of wine with dinner? I don't. I kind of learned from that it's not helpful. And so, yeah, for the listeners, whether you choose to do plant medicine or not, just look at what you're consuming and try taking it out and see what shows up and what you're doing. Because I see back to the, I'm never going to forget this, the high performing zombie. You know, I think people get addicted to performance and addicted to achievement and addicted to billable hours. And so it's not just the things that we consume. It's the, I get approval and that gives me a hit, that gives me a rush, right?
I didn't mention that I slept a lot too in December. Without my medication, I was tired and my body just was like exhausted once I stopped taking the medication. So cutting out like the different substances that were just in me in my diet, the sugars, the dairy, the gluten, that gave me a lot of mental clarity. So I was doing yoga every day. I was meditating every day and that was its own high as well. And so going into it, I felt like I really prepared for the journey that I was about to undertake.
Nice. When I hear you share about mental clarity just from your change in your diet, and then we're like, wait, we're a profession of knowledge workers, and the more mental clarity we have, what if we treated ourselves as high performance Olympic athletes? Because all of that, what happens with the physical body as well as the spiritual, which I'm sure we're going to get to once we get to you drinking the molasses tea, so to speak, it has an impact. It all impacts performance and joy and happiness. But for our listeners in psychedelics, there's some language where we talk about set and setting. Set is your mindset. What do you want to get out of the experience and your intention? We'll get there. Setting is how do you want the actual setting to be so that you feel safe and secure in this environment, because you're not in an ordinary state of consciousness, right? It's not like you're drunk, but it's different, right? So for you, when you went about searching for a retreat center and communicating with them, you know, what were maybe some things that you were looking for that you're like, okay, this place is legit and I feel like this is the right setting for me?
Yeah, I feel like they did a very good job of top of the funnel marketing. They had a lot of FAQ and articles on it. So I did a search and I just saw one of their articles and it addressed the concerns that I may have had, but I wasn't able to articulate at the time. So that whole article that I read was like, all right, this is the place for me, because I don't want something that has 100 people in a gymnasium or in different places within the U.S. So I was like, I probably want to go on, you know, outside the U.S. And I wanted to do, I've never been to Costa Rica. So I saw some of them offered Costa Rica retreats. So then I just narrowed down my search and I was like, okay, who's offering the next Costa Rica retreat? And it was like December 8th. And this was like early December. I just tried to book that one. I thought they had any spaces open. That wasn't even 30 days. And I didn't realize this. I thought I could just hop on a plane and go, you know, and I'll be ready for it. I was very naive about this whole thing. They said I couldn't go there, but they had one in January. And also I touched on, like, they had the interview process too. And that made me feel special. You know, it made me feel like I was selected, because they do deny people too. And I don't know what the reasons were to deny. Like, I just put my best foot forward. I wanted them to approve me. I wanted everybody's approval. So they approved me. They invited me. They answered all my questions. I did a medical screening with them and I felt safe. So I wasn't scared of, and a lot of people, when I mention it, they're like, you're brave. And they talk about, like, oh, wow. Anybody who knows what ayahuasca is like, wow, you did that. So I'm a little proud of myself that I was able to go through something like that. They kind of eased my tensions.
Yeah. So now might be like a good time. I'll just kind of share some information or how to choose the appropriate retreat in medicine. As a professional coach, we have a list of core competencies. And one of the things we've been trained on is, how do we learn how to meet the client where they're at? So some clients come in and, you know, I've worked with people that are beautifully trained accountants and they're really good at their technical acumen, but they don't know how to feel their feelings and they haven't been trained in relationships. So much like I don't know all the bits of the tax code, they're not even ready to like understand what they're feeling, because it's a whole new vernacular for them, right? And similar with plant medicines, there are different medicines to meet you where you're at, depending on how much you've worked on yourself. So we talk about, you know, in coaching and therapy, there's layers of the onion. Like, there's always bits to peel off. You just peel off a layer and there's another layer and another layer and another layer. So I believe that ayahuasca, when people are saying, hey, you're really brave, it's because ayahuasca will take you places without your permission. It is like, come on, we're going for a ride, you know? And you don't necessarily get to say, like, well, pump your brakes, like, I'm not ready. And there's other medicines I've done that are a lot more gentle, where you have to give it permission. And not just like with your mind, but through somatically opening your body. And so I think for me, I've had great experiences with ayahuasca. I almost think probably I'm going to have a dark one coming up, because she's like, oh, you trust me now? You know, now I'm ready to really take you there. But I, you know, it's not necessarily, if you're brand new to plant medicine, it might not be the first place to start. It might be. This is where you got to get out of your head and get into like your inner voice, is like, where am I being called to? And get an access to that bit. But there's different medicines, and that commentary about courageousness is because this is a strong one. You know, I think it's important to tell the audience it's a strong one. I've sat with it 3 times, and the last time I did it, for about 30 minutes, it kept telling me, this medicine's not for everyone. This medicine's not for everyone. This medicine's not for everyone. And in hindsight, I think it told me that, because here I am going to be talking about it very publicly and wanting people to know, like, it's beautiful, but it's strong. And so just keep that in mind.
And I think you also have to ask yourself what type of person you are. Are you the one that wants to go on the scariest ride at the amusement park, that is ready to be the first one to climb up to the highest diving board and jump down? I've always been somebody that's taken a lot of risks in my life, and mostly I can say drugs or any type of physical like thing, like jumping off the cliffs. We used to go to the quarries and jump off the rock quarries, you know, those kind of things. So are we going into the first night? Because this is suspenseful. Yes. If this, we haven't even got there yet. So I take a plane to Costa Rica, and on the plane, I'm like, oof, I'm scared at that point. Like, I hadn't been that scared going into it. I'm on the plane And I decide to put a tweet out. And I said, I'm going on my ayahuasca journey. It was like a little poem on a tweet. I got a lot of encouragement from people that I didn't know were like paying attention to my stuff. It made me feel like I had people behind me that were supporting me. I didn't feel as alone. I didn't feel as isolated going into it. And like, I'm on the ride down and I feel very peaceful. The first day the house was incredible. It's so cool. It was in the Juggles, like 3 hours from San Jose airport. And this house, and they gave me the penthouse suite, which is right under the helicopter pad, because most of the other people that came, they were like in groups. So they were at the little bungalows on the side houses and stuff. Or there was like three guys that came together and then two girls that kind of came together. And then there was me that gave me the penthouse suite. So I'm like,
where do we put the wrapper? We got to put the wrapper in the penthouse underneath the helicopter pad.
That's how it felt. I filmed a music video there. So stay tuned for that up on the helicopter pad. So that was great, but I'm still, you know, at this stage, I was still pretty scared. You know, I felt like I had some support, especially my family. You know, my wife has been so supportive of this whole thing throughout the whole journey. So I didn't really feel that alone or anything, but I still like, what's going to happen? I still wasn't like quite sure how this was going to go. Fast forward to that first ceremony. It was on a Monday, 7 p.m. First, we did something called rapé, which is like a tobacco powdery, like tobacco and hemp. And they shoot it up your nose with like a spout, like a straw. And it fires you up at first. And then you feel this sense of tingle and clarity. So that was to mentally prep us or clear our heads. Once again, we had been meditating a lot during the day. So it's at, you know, around 7 p.m., ceremony starts, super quiet room with a lot of candles and a lot of instruments. And you had the shaman and a couple of the other like, coaches or people there. And then the people in the ceremony, everybody had their own blanket and everything. And they had little buckets for purging. I was a little scared of that too. So he calls us up for the medicine after the rapé. I take a cup of the sweet, sweet nectars of the world. You can call it tar. You can say a little molassesy. I kind of liked the flavor. It was an earthy flavor. It felt like it tasted like the cacao, the earthy chocolate. And then nothing. Crickets. I could literally hear the crickets and all the animal noises out there because we were in the jungle. And it felt like a long time, maybe 2 hours. And then they started like singing and doing little chants. And I started to feel a sense of like calm. And then I start laying down, but I didn't know what was going to happen. And I'm holding my meditation beads and I'm like counting them. And I'm like nervous of what's about to come next. And then this fire ignited like in the middle of me, and it just expanded upwards and downwards, and I just felt it rush up. It was like this feeling of like energy, like a hit by a lightning bolt, and my whole like arms tensed up, and I laid back down, and it felt like I had my meditation beads on, all my hands covering me. I felt like the sensations in my hands tingly and like felt really real, everything. And I just laid down. I couldn't really move for a little while. And I'm like looking up, and it was beautiful. After that first initial like rush, it was just like I had this permanent smile and I was ready to receive. And it was all the people in my life. Everybody in my life just kept coming to me. And then every one of my frayed wires, everything that I was uncertain about just became ultra clear. And I've had these feelings before of like, everything makes sense. Everything is just how it should be. Everything is right where it needs to be. I just felt eternally grateful for everybody in my life and everything that I've done to get here, and all the people that have helped me. And everything felt so pure. All my frayed wires in my head just fused together. During that initial phase, it's like I figured out all the things that I had been working through in my head. And I had clear, ultra clear solutions.
Can you provide maybe examples of that? Because there's so many people that are living with frayed wires or uncertainty or questioning. In the psychedelic world, we'll talk about you get a download, right? Like you get a download from the universe of absolute clarity of I go left, I go right, I do this, I do that. So what are some like things that became ultra clear to you?
The next things I need to do for the business. So business was always a block for me because it felt like it wasn't growing. It felt like I've removed myself. So now it's just like off to the side. And I was fearing that it would just die if it didn't grow and all of that. And then I also just a fear, what does the future hold? I don't know what I was going to do with it. And then I realized every perceived problem I had an answer for in that moment. It was, well, we have a hiring problem. Well, my kids are almost of age that they could start working. My daughter, her friends, they are expressing interest in accounting. And I actually shared this on an episode yesterday. She wants to go into accounting. And so there's a hiring pool right there. There's her friends maybe that are interested in this. I could start hiring people at a younger age. So that was like quick little downloads that I was getting for that front of it. I figured out what was the next thing I was going to do for performance-wise. I had a vision of what the performance would look like, or and then I had a vision of my next rap album, my first rap album, or further clarity on what that looked like. All the tracks played through in my head, the narrative structure of the album, the themes that I wanted to play on, the symbols and all that kind of stuff. I saw that. I had a download of all that. I had music visions and I had work visions.
And it's amazing because I really believe not only in the power of plant medicine to help people with mental health and their healing journey, whether it's healing from substance abuse, because there's a lot of promising research out there on what plant medicine can provide, but even psychedelics for leadership development. I went to a psychedelic conference last November. There was a panel talking about it, and I was just like mind blown, because if someone comes to leadership coaching with a simple, I want to get better at delegation. It's like, it's not about coming up with your 5-step plan for delegating. It's about trust. You know, it's about your relationship with trusting others and trusting yourself. It's the deep stuff. And it's like, I can talk to you about this for 2 years, or you could sit with the medicine for one night and get all these insights, right? But then you've got to take some action on these insights. So for you, you're getting information, clarity on what to do with your business, how to maybe fit some of your hiring needs, and realizing, hey, these answers have already been there. I just had to find a way to quiet that monkey mind and quiet the fears and quiet the need to approve and just get in touch with my divine intelligence.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I had all the answers. I just had to trust myself to make certain decisions. I felt very grateful for everything I already had. I didn't have that impatient need for more, want and need for more. Yeah. I think that's the one thing that would always bring me down during those times of self-doubt or me feeling depressed, is wanting more than I had and reaching for that and feeling lesser than, because I didn't have that thing that maybe I wanted or that next thing, and not feeling as grateful. It's very normal things that most people probably don't have a hard time dealing with. But for me, like, these are my problems in life. Like, I would always, it's always self-inflicted wounds. Reasons I was sad because of the way I made myself feel. I had the answers. It wasn't waiting on anything or blaming anything else for my situation. It was really a lot of, you know, you say like self-actualization, redefining what I thought of myself. And I took the I out of that. The ego was just removed. It wasn't about me anymore. It was about the next phase of what I was doing. And I realized I was doing all this accounting high stuff from the beginning for the next generation, for the next generation of people. I was doing this for people that are unsure about this as a profession. That made everything ultra clear. I made all the other decisions that I was going to make. And I realized I'm not going to stop doing this, because that would be selfish. I can't let some, you know, ridicule from certain people affect me in that way and have me question doing this and go back to being selfish and just making money for me. So looking at this as a selfless act and something that I'm doing, let's just say, for the profession at large, for the people in it. That was the other part of that whole like frayed wires connecting, was I was creating the frayed wires. I was pulling the wires apart. I was getting in the way. As I always kept saying, I knew I was getting in the way, but I didn't know how. I was able to see that. I was able to remove myself as the narrator to that, or become the narrator of the story instead of the protagonist.
Yeah. And what I also heard in your share, you know, specific to Accounting High, you got reconnected with purpose. Why am I doing this? Because I think a lot of times we might start an endeavor, a business, a project with a real clear sense of purpose. And then we get into the fray of doing it because, and it's not what we imagined it would be. And we forget about the purpose because it has obstacles or challenges or whatever, and how important it is just to come back to that anchor of like, why am I really doing this? Why am I doing this? And does it matter? But that was just one night of medicine, because as I understand it, you did three nights for the, like, so, I'll give you the brave award too, because I've only sat with it one night at a time. And just as my analogy, it's like I get so much information. It's like Thanksgiving dinner. Like, I'm full. I don't need to go back for another Thanksgiving meal the next night. But you did. You went for three nights in a row. So tell us about nights.
So it wasn't three nights in a row, but second night it was in a row. And the second night I hadn't slept going into it. And it wasn't for lack of trying. I just had that download and I was, I know I was texting you a lot. I had a lot of ideas. And I said, I'm going to bring this to the world. I'm going to start retreats. Accounting High is going to be, that was the next phase too. That was the next big thing that I had thought was, I want to host retreats. I want Accounting High to host retreats. We've already been doing something similar in a way, more decentralized. And now I want to do something formal and like actually host Accounting Ayahuasca retreats. You had been like referring to that you might want to do retreats too. So you were in my vision. Like, all of this started becoming very clear on the path that this was realistic. I had people that were actually interested in it. They messaged me about this. Formally, it felt like the next phase to create leaders to have experiences like this. And I wanted to share this. It was like immediately I wanted to share that feeling with the world. And that was the first day. So I didn't sleep and I couldn't, because I just had so many great thoughts in my head. I was so happy. I was like, everything. I was talking to my wife, talking to my kids. I actually ended up getting a little high during the day too, which was the first time I was getting high. And I felt guilty about that too. I was like, maybe I'm not supposed to. And they said it would tamper the effects of the medicine, or it would dull the effects. And I was like, well, this was so strong. I maybe want to dull the effects on the next night. It might be too much. Going into it, 7 p.m., night two, rapé again. They started with the rapé, and I'm tired. I like physically kind of exhausted too. You know, I still had a feeling from the night before. And not to mention too that I had a beautiful night that first night, but everybody else had horrible experiences that first night, and I witnessed it. I saw how bad it could be. I didn't feel any of those feelings. Like, nothing was dark for me that first night, but I witnessed like the darkness that could overtake you. People were screaming like an agony. So I was not naive to the fact that I could be going into a really dark experience. So I kind of braced myself for the fact that I hadn't slept, and I know how I am with lack of sleep. Going into it though, like ready for another experience, very open, but not as open as I was the first night. The first night, it was intentional. I went in there with a mantra of my wife and my kids, and I just kept thinking about all the people in my life. The second night, I was just worried about how I would feel and scared, and me. It was more of like a me thing going into it. They had the rapé, cleared my head a little bit. I felt still. And then they introduced something called Sananga, and it's an eye drop that they put in that burns like a layer off of the top of your eye, or they described it like this would feel like fire in your eyes. And I did it because they said it also would provide a lot of clarity. You'll be able to see better the next day. You'll have mental clarity, but also you'll have, it's for depression, they said. It's for those kind of things too. And I didn't know how an eye drop could affect you that way, but I went for it anyway, and God, it burned. It was like fire in my eyes. I had to stand up and I couldn't open my eyes for a little while, and it felt like my eyes were melting, and it was just little drops that they put in, and I cleaned it off a little bit, and they called us up for the ayahuasca. It was a half a cup this time. I noticed it was less, and I had my cup, sat down, nothing for like what felt like 2 hours. And I'm thinking in my head, oh, I'm not going to feel anything tonight because I got high today, and it must have turned off my receptors, and maybe I won't even feel it. And so I'm just like bracing myself. Maybe I'll be able to fall asleep, and laying down. And then the feeling came over me again, like fire at a certain point. And it felt like I was going to throw up. I didn't throw up the first night either. Like, no purging. First night, no purging. Second, up until that point, kind of felt like I was going to throw up, but I didn't. I don't know if I was trying to have the control over myself and not allowing myself to purge. I thought maybe that could have been something. I know we had discussed that a little bit. I wanted to keep control, so I was trying not to, but eat regardless. It wasn't, the stomach didn't hurt that much after, but it was dark. I was so hard on myself that night. Everything that I had done wrong to somebody or did to create the situation I was in, to feel alone, to feel isolated, it was all my fault. Everything I did was terrible. It was all going to come back to me. And I just felt all the things I did in my life. I felt very regretful, remorseful, sad. And then I started to get some psychosis. Then I started to feel like I died. Then I felt like this was like lost. This was my, I died on the plane and I was in this purgatory of, it felt like paradise. And maybe I never go back home. Maybe that was the torture. Maybe I figured out all the answers. I figured out my album, but I'm already dead, so it didn't matter. And I was dead in my experience of that. But then it felt like a simulation. And then it was like, oh, wait, I'm in control of this now. And the music, I'm feeling so connected to the sounds and like walking through the pool a little bit and feeling the water on me. It rained a little bit too, so I could hear the rain outside. And I'm like getting really sweaty and dark. And I felt like I was dead. And it felt like the music was on a loop in my head. And I was soaked. It was like drenched in that state. I felt like I was moaning or like kind of screaming the whole time. Felt like nobody else existed. It felt like they were all just figments of my imagination anyway. And this was what I was going through in that second night. It all just felt like sand the second day. It all just disappeared. All those feelings of like everything, figuring all of it out, just like evaporated. And I felt alone. I felt dark after I came out from the ceremony and I woke up a little bit because I fell asleep. I talked to the shaman a little bit. And I'm talking, like, trying to articulate how bad it was. And he got it. Obviously, he's seen a lot of people go through this. So he was able to say a few things to me in response to what I was talking about that really connected with me. And one of them was, it's stories that you're telling yourself. You're the character in this story. Whether you heard the story somewhere else, it's the story you're telling yourself. And those are the loops. And then immediately it clicked. It's like Lost is a story. The show is a story. And anything else that I was like telling myself or I was the victim of or I did this was just me in place of that protagonist or that antagonist. It was like heroes and villains in my head. And I was the villain on the night two. First night I was the hero and night two I was the villain. And I knew I could be both those sides. I've always told myself or like had this self-talk of I could be the hero or the villain. I just need to choose. That's what's ingrained in our heads. We're always told that the stories we learn in life, the hero's journey. And I felt like I had turned into the villain on night two, but that was another just story I was telling myself. And it didn't click until he told me. And it felt very real. It felt like I was in a simulation. It felt like I was dead. I was able to relate to those a lot more and realize what had happened there and what went wrong or what triggered maybe that negative thought loop or that thought pattern. But we get into these thought patterns all day, every day. They may not be as intense as on ayahuasca, but I realize those are the things that happen to me every day. Me feeling like I've alienated myself or that I'm the reason for this or I'm at fault for this when nobody's really thinking about me in the first place. All this negative self-talk about this person who I said something to or I did this to or this, those people aren't even thinking about me. And it's just me. I'm creating that. I'm causing that. And that's where I'm getting in the way. So that was like a very valuable lesson I learned. And it was just a few words from the shaman afterwards. Obviously, other details and other things that I may have said in different times telling this story. But that's like we're all characters in the stories we're telling ourselves. And I didn't feel like I had any control over that. But now I do. I feel like I'm the narrator. The narrator, the author, and not the character in the story that's just being painted. The story's being written for me. I can help write that story too. And I realize I've always been the writer and the narrator to that story. And those were the stories I was telling myself as a kid all throughout my life.
Yeah.
So
I think there's a couple beautiful elements in your share. And one is, you know, after you had a particularly darker experience, you were able to talk with somebody about it, right? There's a shaman there that is probably steeped in the tradition and has sat with many other people in their medicine journey. And so I really believe that's an important thing when you're choosing who you're going to work with, you know, similar but different. I did some mushrooms, like, I don't know, when I was like 19 or 20, and it wasn't intentional. Nothing illuminating came from it. It was just like a good time, you know? And that's very different than going into it with like, I've prepared for this. I'm going in with an intention of what I want to get out of it. I have somebody there with me to either process in the moment or shortly thereafter to help me make meaning of it and pull the wisdom out of it. So it is very different when we're doing it in this sacred way. The other bit is I say consciousness and performance are so intertwined, right? Like I have a whole business, Conscious Public Accountants, because if you do not get present to the stories going on in your head, it is going to impact everything that you do, whether it's how you lead clients, how you lead a team, how you lead your family, all of it. And you need to become aware of, when am I telling myself an empowered story? When am I being terrible to myself? You know, what's the impact? And so it's very lovely that in this non-ordinary state and shortly thereafter, you get to realize where you've been on loop, right? You get to realize where maybe you've been on in your own way. And I'm curious if you saw any of this. Like, I've had the medicine either take me back to the past and relive an experience to understand it and glean wisdom. And then I've actually had it show me things in the future and give me messages. Did you have anything like that show up for you? Or
I tried to remain in the present, but inevitably it takes you to the past and the future. And in the first night, most of it was future oriented and looking forward and what's next. And that was all the happiness, all the joyous, everything felt great because it was all optimistic. And second night, it felt like it was more reviewing and re-downloading past experiences. And it was all the negative parts of the past. Those are the things that came up, or the reasons I was where I was, or I was feeling that certain way was because of these events in the past. Are we moving on to night three?
Yeah.
Night three was blissful. If you could take the best parts of night one, but dim it down a little bit, that's sort of what it was. It wasn't as intense. I wasn't like downloading that much on that night. It almost felt like I was synthesizing everything that happened on the first two nights. And my stomach hurt a lot. And so that was what I was focused on most of the night too. And maybe if I let myself go and I let myself purge, then I maybe would have felt better, but I wasn't going to make myself throw up. And so I was just sitting with that in my stomach the whole time. And so that was what I took away from it, was maybe I should have let go a little more. Maybe I would have felt a little bit more, but I didn't really feel like I needed much more. At that point, I just wanted to vibe with the music. Like, I wasn't looking to solve my problems or the world's problems at that point. I was just looking to like have some inner peace. And I couldn't get that inner peace because my stomach was killing me. I've always had some digestive issues, or I've had some in this past year. And so I think either the ayahuasca or some of the food I was eating didn't sit well. And I had a lot of blood that day. So that was stuck in my head too on the third night. And I kept seeing that blood, and I don't like the sight of blood right now, not in my 40s. And so that's sort of how I felt on the third night, but I was grateful to be alive. I didn't feel like I died. I didn't go into that psychosis loop that I felt on the second night. It was just a lot of like, I want to feel this inner peace, but I can't because my stomach is killing me. And I kept thinking it was just like the medicine sitting there, and maybe I needed to throw up. So that was my third night.
Well, there's an expression that the medicine won't necessarily give you what you want, but it will give you what you need. And, you know, I'm reminded of a friend of mine went and sat with ayahuasca. She's a female. She's not that big. And she took two cups and felt nothing hallucinogenic. And for her experience was just like her tummy was a little bit on a roller coaster all night. And then shaman's interpretation, as he spoke with her, she realized she holds everything. Like, she holds all of her energy and all of her tension and all of her anxiety in her gut, and she's had, you know, acne issues and different things. And so his wisdom was that the medicine had to first heal her the physicality of what was going on for her. Like, that's what it was working for her. So I would trust that the medicine was giving you what you needed, you know, whatever that experience was.
Yeah. Yeah.
So the $1 million question is, what are you going to do with all of this, right? Because in coaching, we talk about when we have insights and new awareness, and then we take action, that's where we get transformation. But if we have insight and we don't take any action, we're left with regret because we didn't act on what we saw. So for you, what are maybe some things that you've already changed about your life, your lifestyle, with your relationships, your business, since you've had this experience?
I feel like I'm doing a lot of paring down and removing things after. This experience hasn't been, oh, wow, I now need to do all of these extra things. Now I got to get to work. I don't feel like that. I felt like I was at work, pretty hard at work for the last couple of years, doing a lot of different things. And now my intention is to be quiet, just shut the F up for a little bit and slow down. Been doing a lot of talking, a lot of rapping, doing a lot of that. So I am slowing down. I'm not going to write any new raps until I really feel like inspired and one pulls at me. I'm doing stuff with my kids now too. So less accounting stuff, more kid stuff. I'm pulling back on what my ambitions were for this big Accounting High project for this year. You know, I wanted to have 5 new shows and all of these crazy fun high school things. So I pulled that back a little bit. Now it's still just focused on this podcast and the YouTube channel and the upcoming tournament and things like that. So I'm going to try to slow down on all the extras that I'm doing. I got to be a lot more intentional, but also I got to be a lot more forgiving to myself. That's part of this process. I'm going to be less empathetic toward the people that are not filling me up and not need their approval. That's really hard for me to do because I want everybody's approval. I want everybody to like me. So I'm going to stop focusing on the people that aren't fans to begin with, or at this point, they're pulling away from me, pulling my energy in a bad way. So with that said, that means that there's less to do, and that's hard for me to deal with. I'm not taking my medicine, so my days are filled with a lot of nothing. I don't know. I'm just trying to live and learn how to live without it right now before I go off doing any big things. But the other thing that I want to do still, the new thing I want to do is host retreats. So that's sort of what this episode was going to lead to, is see who's interested in something like this. Who might be interested in going on an Accounting High ayahuasca retreat? Who wants to go on a journey with us if we could put something like this together? Because I think I only need 10 people to host a retreat with this group that did it. And it was fantastic. It wasn't cheap. I didn't mention this was $7,800 plus my plane ticket. So it wasn't cheap. That was a big part of my journey too, is to be able to spend that money. I'm pretty cheap. I'm an accountant. You know, I realized that if we're going to put on a really good retreat, it's not going to be cheap. Just get an idea of who's out there, who's ready for something like this. So I'm putting that out there here. Whoever is ready, you can email me directly. I don't check my email much, but you could either reach out to me on LinkedIn, say something about ayahuasca, or email me at my Accounting High email address. That's scotty@accountinghigh.com. I didn't ever give that away to anybody before. So,
ooh, wow. Look at C's demonstrating new behaviors. And similar, I would love to hear from people who have an interest in plant medicine retreats. We text about it while you were in Costa Rica. But when I did my first medicine experience, I wasn't there to think about accounting. In fact, back at that time, I felt really done with accounting because I feel that accounting firms are super cheap about developing in the non-technical part of the human. I'm like, I can make a lot more money as a coach in a different industry. But the medicine showed me, speaking on stage at an accounting conference, and it said part of your soul's mission is to help other accountants who went through childhood trauma. And another thing that it showed me, it was like I was like looking at a totem pole. It was like the very top was like, you know, the god, and then there's the plants and the medicine, and then there's the shaman, and I was the coach. So I've never felt drawn to being the person that serves the medicine, but I have felt very drawn and knowing that I was going to coach people in this journey. And it's just a matter of time until I do it. And I've declared I'm enrolling in a program specifically for coaches who want to learn more about psychedelic integration, because I take this work very seriously and I want to do the best. So for people who are interested, more than happy to chat. I know we're going to keep our conversation alive. And thanks so much for letting us hear about your experience. It takes a lot of courage to go to another country and down the rabbit hole, as I like to call it. And then it takes even more courage to come back and openly share about it. So briefly, you know, quickly after your experience. So thank you for your share and thanks for everyone for listening.
Yeah. Thank you guys for listening. This has been a lot for me. It's a big download and it's hard to get it all out in one sitting too, because it's so interconnected to everything. So if you feel like you're on that calling or you've been called or this is a trigger, reach out to one of us. We could even just talk about it, or if you're curious about it a little bit more. Everybody's experience with this is going to be different. That was one thing that, like, this was my own experience. Everything that I went through and that led me to this journey and everything, that's what I shared today. But nobody's is going to be like this, because everybody's unique. Everybody's different. Everybody's got a different take on it.
Yeah, so absolutely.
Dope. Well, appreciate you, Amber.
Appreciate you.
Thanks. Class dismissed. Accounting.